cooking, eating, and then buses and cars going down and down, and there he was sitting and doing his work, come totally undisturbed. Peace is here. And that peace comes from non-division. The motor car horn and I are one. That does not mean, and therefore I should sit there and... No. If at the same time the hands want to close your ears, let them. It's inner vision that matters. In that inner vision is there a division. Remove that. And don't let the mind suggest, and therefore. And therefore is the suggestion of the ego. Is that clear? When the master says something, and the mind immediately says, and therefore. You must discipline your tongue. How? And therefore, I must stop eating sugar. That's not discipline of the tongue. It may be necessary at a certain stage. Then you may develop a taste for chilies, spices. And then someone says you must discipline your tongue, you must drop that. Then you come down to sour things. Or you develop a taste for something which nobody else eats. You are safe, because you have no competitors. There is still, if you watch yourself, you are merely substituting one evil for another evil. You have still not come to that, come to grips with the basic factor that divides. And you may see this happen all over the world. She has a vision of Krishna and she has a vision of Christ, and they hit each other. They married each other. Yeah, you've seen that. And what is that kind of God? What is that kind of God realization? And I say I have realized God. I have had enlightenment. I have attained cosmic consciousness. And he says, ah. Then I am offended. I am disappointed, at least, if not offended, yes? That he is not accepting the fact that I am cosmic consciousness. If I am cosmic consciousness, how does this disappointment arise in me? What for? Does it depend upon somebody's opinion? No. Or, if it does depend upon somebody's opinion, how is it this cosmic consciousness refuses to accept itself there? Cosmic consciousness means cosmic consciousness, everybody. The consciousness that lies hidden in all. But it is not accepted there. And because it is not accepted there, it is disappointed here. Silly. That's the whole game on all over the all over again. So one has to dig and dig and dig and dig and go over and over again. And recognize that as long as the body is there, the possibility of the consciousness getting confused with the body also exists. Once this personality is enlightened and therefore dissolved, as we were saying this morning, when this personality is enlightened, it becomes less dense and gets dissolved. When it is dissolved, it fills the ignorance moat around it, and therefore it becomes one with the universe. But as long as the body lasts, how long will the body last? How long will the body last? It will last as long as the momentum that gave birth to it lasts.
Which is karma.
which is karma, which is, we can call it biological age, why not, what's wrong with that? Why use the word karma? There is a biological age built into the cells of the body, and that body will continue to function till the end of that biological span, lifespan, which is karma according to Oriental theory. And as long as that exists, the possibility exists of consciousness, the infinite, once again identifying itself with that limitation. Possibility, just a possibility, nothing to be frightened about. In other words, if you bring the sun here, it will never set. But if you light a lamp in this room, there is a possibility that the lamp may go out and darkness return. Why is it so? Not in the outer space. The outer space is not possible. The darkness is not possible in the outer space. Yes, it's clear, isn't it? In the outer space, darkness is not possible. Because this room limitation does not exist there. But in a situation of limitation, like this room, you can light a lamp, keep it burning all the time. And as long as this lamp is burning, the darkness would not enter. But there is always a possibility that the lamp may go out and the darkness may return. And therefore, till the end of one's life, one's means the end of this lifespan of the body, one has to be cautious. And that is the purpose of this enlightenment. The very meaning of the word enlightenment is that the light is there, constantly, undying. If it is capable of dying out, it's not light. It's wax. So, both these theories may be right, that once you attain enlightenment, there is no more return to this earth plane. That's also right. Because if it is true light, like the sun, then it should not set. If it is capable of being blown out, then it is not light, it is wax. But even that wax light, wax candle, will keep the darkness out as long as it is ablaze. And therefore, the master said that right through his life, he maintained his whatever discipline he undertook in the beginning. Even in when the body was very very ill, and were we talking about? I think we were talking. Yes, about the morning meditation. Even when the body was very ill, he would get up at 3:30, switch the light on, go to the bathroom, have some wash or something like that. The stick, tick, tick, tick. He used his long stick to get out of bed and walk. And then throw it away, jump back into bed, sleep. That discipline he maintained throughout. In the beginning, the discipline has to be cultivated, yes? You have to discipline yourself. It's not very pleasant. Then once it has become your part of your nature itself, second nature, it becomes habit. It's no longer painful, it's no longer forced. But that does not mean that at that stage discipline drops away. It's a very wrong notion that some people have. Once I am enlightened, I can drop all these things away. They may drop away. Some things may drop away. Like your teeth, for instance. Right? So you don't have to hold on to them. Don't try to hold on to them. Don't try to drop them. The disciplines may undergo some change. For instance, the master, in the beginning, the early stages, he wouldn't even sit on a he wouldn't sit on a chair, and he wouldn't sit on even a cushion. Till a long, long time. I think the cushion came only in 1952-53. In the bhajan hall, the prayer hall, where we used to hold the satsang, he preferred to sit next to the door. Just like that. Just here. Exactly same. And why? He said once that I got loose bowels and so on. And diabetes, which means I may have to get up, and I don't want to disturb others, so I sit near the door. He never got up, never once disturbed the satsang. But again, according to him, the possibility exists of this thing happening, and so it's better to sit near the door. And we wanted to ensure that nobody sat there, in case somebody else came earlier than him. He always came about 10 minutes earlier than the meeting time, always, wherever it was, whether it was a public meeting, private meeting, came the ashram satsang, he came 5 or 10 minutes earlier. But it's possible that somebody else came a few minutes earlier still and sat there. So we first put a cushion, we threw it away. Then we had a small piece of cloth folded in like that, we used to put it there, so that people might recognize that this is where Swami Shivananda sat. Then later, that changed, he couldn't sit down. Then he had to be provided chairs. And then the body became more and more and more delicate. Only yesterday she explained to me how the diabetic body wears out very quickly. Only then we understood that. The skin became terribly sensitive, and it was only during the last 10 or 15 years that he was given a nice sofa, etc. The young people used to look at that and say, oh, Swami Shivananda could have a sofa, why not I? Crazy tragedy. So there may be some such change taking place, yes? That is a natural physiological change. It is not a psychological change, it is not a spiritual change at all.
If he hadn't attained self-realization, he probably would have been in great pain in his later years.
Correct. Possibly. And probably because of that again, even when the body was medically in distress, he didn't show it. And this, again, I have not seen one other holy man of his stature do something which even you and I would probably shy away from. If the body was not well, he did not show that, oh no, I am able to overcome all this. Never said that. And he was not ashamed to be pushed in a wheelchair, yes? That was the tremendously subtle razor's edge. He could have remained in his own apartments and asked everybody else to go there. No, he didn't want to. Later he did. That is when even that was not possible. Even getting up and getting into the wheelchair and being pushed was not possible. He accepted even that. But as long have you tried? Have you made the body do its utmost? That only you can decide. That he did all the time. In the beginning, he wouldn't allow anybody to walk with him. Even when he was walking inside the ashram, nobody should walk. Walked alone. And then, around 1950, I think, he said, all right, somebody could accompany him. The All India tour broke his health. First difficulty arose then, because it was a shattering tour. For 2 months, nobody knew whether we are all alive or dead. We're just automatically walking, automatically moving, automatically doing things. And when we came back, he was nearly shattered. And then he said, I feel giddy when I walk. And during the All India tour also, half the time he used to hold my hand and walk. Just said, I feel giddy sometimes. So I was his walking stick, the best part of the tour. And when he came back, he complained, sometimes I feel giddy. And he didn't want to use the stick immediately. So he said, let the man who accompanied Swami Shivananda, let him have the stick. And if I felt giddy, I'll take it. So not giving the body more attention than it deserved, but not denying what it had to have. Right. So there is no, it was not the showing off, oh, I don't care for my body. No. Then it will punish you. If you do that, the body will punish you. The body is capable of doing that much, do it. Let it do. And where it cannot support it, it needs a stick. That is, without that stick, it would not take one more step, hold it. Don't stand on any kind of, I'm a great man type. No. And when that was not enough, he held two people and walked. And when that was not enough, the wheelchair could drive him to the office. And even that was not possible, he said, lay down in his own room. During this transition, he used to come out of his room, walk over to mine where I used to stay. We used to transact some work there, and then used to go up the steps. These steps were fairly steep. The steps from the road level to where I used to stay. Did you see that? You went there, no? The little room down below.
Yes.
Used to come up there and then go up. And that is all right. Those steps were very steep. That used to be all right for some time. One day I distinctly remember this. He got out of the room, walked along, took two or three steps. Naga, hold the stick. And then yes, on all fours. He climbed all those steps on all fours, hands and hands and feet. Crawled up those steps, got onto the top, stood up, took the stick again. Ah, Patala? He was crawling. You and I would have been miserable, yes? Thinking, my God, what a great holy man I am, the yogi of the Himalayas, fantastic thing. The whole world is looking at me, and then I am crawling. What a miserable fate. Why should it happen to me? Nothing. The body is unable to function that way. Give it this way, crawl. You could crawl up. And stand there and take this. What were you saying? Right. Go on. Continue the conversation. As though nothing happened. That is not possible. That is not possible. Then the next. That is what is probably called non-attachment to the body. It's not non-attachment to the body is not something which you detach it and give it to somebody else. What for? It's something which I don't think.
Maybe I should put some more film in.
What does this non-attachment mean? What does it mean? One has to watch, see, and perhaps even when you watch and see, you misunderstand, no? After all, it's through this mind I am watching you.
Yeah. this has nothing to do with your talk, but you once said in one of your books about that he was the thought and satsang for the people.
Yes.
Can you have a satsang? Is it meaningful then when there isn't anybody who has attainment?
Yes. I think I mentioned this at the same time. The sat in the sat means the reality, the truth. The truth in the satsang is represented by the master. The master is the reality. He represents the reality for us. In seeing him, in being in his presence, and in talking to him, we grow closer to the reality. Right? If he is not there, then his words, his teachings are the master. And that was what he himself, that was the example he himself set. The very beginning of life in the ashram, the satsang had a completely different phase. There was no talking, there was no music at all. It was the start and end very simply and very beautifully. Have I ever told you this? No. So probably it may be good to hear. The earliest satsang. And it continued till again 1950. Later half of 1950. No lectures, no talking, and not much of singing except occasionally whenever we had a visiting songstress or musician type. Occasionally, very rarely. Even then, if it was going to be a proper concert, we had it independent of the satsang, after or before. Once again, the master had a certain seat, a little piece of cloth spread on the ground. That was where he sat. And during summer, the satsang was held in his own veranda. It was not then what it looks now. It was an open space, open to the sky. And the master would sit down. Exactly, 8 o'clock the satsang starts, 8 o'clock the door would open and he would walk and sit down there. And as soon as he sat down, the few of us lined up the left, the Ganges side, and then a few others on the other side, two rows of people, plus a few visitors. The whole thing was probably about 15 people. Don't be frightened. And this was true even of later years. Even when there were about 200 people living in the ashram, the people who attended the satsang were only about 20 or 30. So, nothing disappointed him. He was not worried at all. There were probably 20 people in the satsang. Some of them probably used to go with him when he started going late. But he was worried. Satsang was important every day. As soon as he sat down, the person sitting next to him on the left, he would start his jagnesh. All that Swamiji did when he occupied his seat was to see who was sitting at the extreme right. She is there at the extreme right, that's all. He was not interested in anything else. Jayaganesha was over. There was no light. We had a small hurricane lantern placed on a little stool. And one of those reading planks you've seen? For keeping books. Right. The next person would read one chapter of the Gita. With or without meaning, mostly without meaning. Just for the recitation, hearing, listening. And that person, after finishing the recitation, led a kirtan, singing. There was no interval, there was no meditation or something, nothing. There was no period of silence. As soon as the reading was over, he or she did the kirtan. and the lamp was passed down to the next person. He read a portion of the Upanishads, with or without meaning, mostly without meaning. And then sang a kirtan, led a kirtan. Pushed on to the next one. He read from the Ramayana some scripture, something else. And then, occasionally again, there used to be, sometimes, occasionally, there used to be a reading from Swami Shivananda's own writing. This he used very carefully, very cleverly. It could be a visitor to the ashram, a young man, and you have told him that it's impossible, he goes on smoking all the time. And he's a visitor and you don't want to, you know, rub him on the wrong side and tell him not to go, etc. And he probably stays, he intends to stay for 3 or 4 months. Swamiji would write an article, stop this bad habit at once. It's an article, it's not meant to refer to him. And you would write it, if he was a typist, you would give it to him. Oh, take 3 copies and give me. It's nothing, I'm not trying to teach you, I'm not trying to teach you nothing. Well, I've written an article, will you type 3 copies and give me? And while typing the 3 copies, he knows the 4th copy is him. He is the 4th copy. If he is not a typist, then she types it. She typed 3 copies. And he would bring it along to the satsang. And quite innocently, Judge, would you like to read this? That's all. And it hits a couple of people who are involved in it. The 4th and 5th copy. That way, occasionally, his own articles or something like that used to be read. That's it, finished. The reading portion is over. And the last man would reduce that Harikin lantern or put it out, put it away. From the next person, one after the other, everyone should sing and lead the chorus. Right. What happens if she decides that my voice is not good, my singing tone is not good, my rhythm is not good, or maybe even the words are not good? She keeps quiet. The master had a flashlight that long. More a walking stick then. Flashlight. And that lay by his side when he sat down. After he has finished his singing, the next one is you. And it must go on automatically after a few seconds pause. Few seconds, 1 minute, then quietly he opens his eyes. Then, Haji, who is it? Then the flashlight comes, blink, shines right on your face. I'm not used to it, I don't know how to sing. Say Ram Ram. He wouldn't leave you till you said at least Ram Ram and everybody else said Ram Ram. Break out of that shyness or shyness which may even be pride. It may even appear superficially look like shyness or humility. It may be some kind of pride, self-consciousness. Break it. Say Ram Ram. There was one young man who joined us in 1947. He had no voice, musical voice, he had no idea at all. But he was a social worker and a sort of congressman, congress worker. So he knew this Raghupati Raghava Raja Rampatita Pavana Sitara. The congress people used to sing in those days. When he joined the ashram, he kept quiet. Then the first day he said, I don't know anything songs. Sing anything you like. Sing anything you have heard of. I have no good voice. Voice is not important. Right? You said so, you asked me to. Raghavata Raghava Raja Ram Patita Pavana Sita Ram. Everybody had to say exactly in the same way. Otherwise you put him into shame, yes? You introduce your own tunes and nice, lovely, no. The master didn't like it. So, if he sang it in a very funny way, all of us had to repeat. Right? He thought, that's all. And you ask me to sing, I'll keep singing. Raghavata Raghava Raja Ram Patita Pavana Sita Ram went on, repeating again and again and again. The master didn't say how many times. And then he had to say, oh. This went round till the master heard her voice. That means all the people have participated in the congregation, in the satsang. Then he might, he usually wound up with Hare Rama, some particular kirtan for the day. The Maha Mantra, the Hare Rama Mantra was almost invariable. And plus one mantra, one kirtan for the day. In Tuesdays and Fridays, he would say Om Shakti or some Devi. On Thursday, he would say some Guru. Something like that. And then on Saturday, some special kirtan. And if there were some overnight guests who would be leaving the next day, then he used to pick up one of his song books and literally read a couple of songs from there. That's all. The kirtan, the Trayambakam Bhajami. And then there was this arati. We used to have this ritualika, ritual arati, standing up. Sarvesham Swasti Bhavatu, Sarvesham Shanti Bhavatu. Then they would distribute the ashes. That is the only prasad we had in the early years. As soon as that was distributed, I'm sure, she's walking. They're gone. Before you know what happened, he disappeared. And he had also instructed most of us that when the satsang was over, quietly go away to your room and go to sleep in that mood. It's better. Then later, it changed. Even when it changed, it underwent its own natural change, he didn't rebel against it. He didn't worry about it. Then Swaminarayana Brahmananda came. We had bhajans. And then he also wanted to show us some music. All good. Then somebody else came. Lectures were arranged. And it's to your credit. Foreign visitors came and they couldn't appreciate all the satsang as it went on there. Because what have we gained from this satsang? What do we gain from this satsang? The satsang was probably meant to make you lose something. What do we gain from this satsang? And then he said, all right, you want to listen to some talk, Vedanta talk, all right, good. Then Jyotirmaya, somebody used to give a couple of talks. Nobody asks, what do I gain from this talking? Seems to satisfy something. And then, of course, he introduced one more. I don't know how this happened. I think, yes, right. When visitors came to the ashram, they usually brought a basket of fruits or sweets and things like that. And sometimes he used to distribute them in the office itself. Then he felt that if he distributed the fruits in the office, they usually went on to the same people. The same small group that sit around him in the office. He said, no, we'll take it as a satsang. So everybody else could have some prasad. It was not always all the time that the visitors come and the visitors bring fruits. But then you have your prasad after the satsang, on 4 days, and fifth day you miss it. And so he said, all right, let's prepare some prasad and distribute during the satsang. All these things grew strange circumstances, strange ways.
In the reading in our satsang from the Ananda Gita, who is Moksha Priya?
It is a boy who joined us and stayed with us for a couple of years. The book itself was written by Swami Shivananda. It is not Moksha Priya who asked the question. The question also was asked by Swami Shivananda himself. It was written as a book.